Okay, this is the hour. We shall take your phone calls and also your stories. I'd love to hear if you've gone through your own metamorphosis, your own change. Check in with us, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Joe Dispenza with us, your phone calls as well, and your stories. Joe, I bet you've heard incredible stories about people who've gone through change.
Oh, yeah. I've been really touched by simple people that really reasoned themselves to transformation. And it's actually what I use really to create the model of change, just by understanding people who have done it enough times I've seen some pretty miraculous things.
Give me an example.
Well, let's see. There was a man that was diagnosed with cancer, and he was actually on an elevator. And when he was getting off the floor, there was a man standing next to him who was a dermatologist. And the dermatologist pulled him off the elevator and said, "Hey, can I take a look at your face here?" And he said, "You know, you have cancer on your face, malignant cancer." So this man scheduled the typical procedure. He had, he had it frozen. He had it cut out. And then, of course, he had it radiated. And then about 4 months later, it appeared on his neck, larger.
Oh.
So then he had it, you know, same procedure, frozen, cut out, and radiated. 3 or 4 months later, it came back on his side. He did the same procedure. And finally, it showed up on his calf, and that was about the size of an apricot. So he said, he had seen the movie What the Bleep Do We Know that I was in, and then he read my book and read a couple other books, and he began to reason, like, "Well, what is this marble rolling around in my brain that keeps creating this condition?" Now, if emotions are the end product of experience, he began to look at it. He said, "What emotion have I memorized that keeps signaling the same gene in the same way every single day?" And he realized when he sat down and looked at himself that he lived his whole life in resentment, resented someone or something every day.
Jeez.
And so he began to look at the thoughts that created the resentment. You know, in other words, when he was feeling resentment, what were the thoughts that he would think? And he listed them all down. He wrote them all down. And he became conscious of every single thought, so none of those thoughts would slip by his awareness again. And then he said, "What are the behaviors that I demonstrate? What do I do? What do I say when I'm feeling this emotion?" And he began to observe himself in his life. And he wrote down every behavior, every action, every verbalization that he made when he felt resentment. And then he said, "What are the other emotions that are created from resentment? Do I judge? Am I impatient?" And he began to become conscious of his unconscious self. And he reviewed this list every single day. And what he didn't know that he was doing is that he was biologically no longer firing and no longer wiring the same circuits in his brain. And he was no longer emotionally signaling the same genes in the same way that created the disease. After about 5 or 6 days, he started to feel really lifted. He started to feel really good because he began to break that emotional state. He began to say, "When I go back into my life, who do I want to be?" And he began to think about the thoughts he did want to believe in and the behaviors he did want to demonstrate and the emotions that he did want to live by. And as he began to think in new and unusual ways, he moved into a new state of being. And when he returned back into his life, about 10 days later, he was in the shower getting ready for the surgery to have the cancer removed. And when he was in the shower, he looked down at his leg, and the cancer literally had fallen off his leg. It literally just fell off.
That's amazing.
And he became somebody else. And a new personality creates a new personal reality, and he was totally healed.
How important, Joe, is positive thinking?
Well, this isn't positive thinking, George, because...
No, it's not. I know.
Because a lot of times, you know, let's just break this down. Every time we have a thought, we make a chemical. If we have a great thought or an unlimited thought, we turn on a set of circuits in our brain in a very specific sequence or pattern that produces a level of mind that signals another part of the brain that makes a chemical for us to feel exactly the way we're just thinking, great or unlimited. If we have a nugget of thought or an unhappy thought, we turn on a different set of circuits in the brain that produce a different level of mind that makes a different blend of chemicals to make us feel exactly the way we're just thinking, negative or unhappy. Now, the moment we begin to feel the way we think, because the brain is in constant communication with the body, we begin to think the way we feel, which makes more chemicals for us to feel the way we think and think the way we feel. And this cycle of thinking and feeling and thinking creates what I call a state of being. So if a person has an insecure thought, they begin to feel insecure. The moment they feel insecure, they think more insecure thoughts. And this cycle goes on for certain people for 20 or 30 years until they say, I am insecure. And whenever we say, I am anything, the mind and body are working together. Now, it's the repetition of this cycle of thinking and feeling over time that conditions the body to be the mind. Now, when the body becomes the mind, that's called a habit. So then, if that is a subconscious program, then 5% of the conscious mind is trying to work against 95% of what the person has memorized subconsciously. So if the person's thinking positively with the 5% of their conscious mind, but they've been feeling negatively for the last 25 years, that's mind and body in opposition. If the person's praying for a new life and a new opportunity, but they're feeling guilty, that's mind and body in opposition. So positive thinking doesn't work a lot of the times because the person is working against how they internally feel, which is negatively. We have to literally become somebody else.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Oceanside, California. Michael's with us, first of all. Go ahead, Michael.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have been grieving my mom's passing for 3.5 years, and I've tried different medications and hypnotherapy, CDs, and I'm a person who doesn't stop trying to help himself, but nothing really helped me until 2 weeks ago. I went for a massage, and the next day I felt terrible because I guess I had 3.5 years of toxins built up in my body from all the grief and sadness and so on. And ever since I had that massage, after the toxins dissipated, that took maybe a day or two, I have felt so much better since, and I'm going to be going weekly now to have a massage. And I just thought I would bring that up, that that's what really helped me.
Sure, let's talk about that, because the latest research shows now that even massage epigenetically begins to change the body. But it's an amazing concept that the body is the unconscious mind. In other words, it doesn't know the difference between an experience that produces an emotion and a thought that creates the emotion. What most people don't know is that when they begin to think about a past experience, they produce the same chemistry in the brain and in the body as if the event was happening. Now, you do that over and over again, you begin to literally condition the body emotionally to become the mind. So it's now the energy or the emotion is stored in the body. It's not stored in the mind. It's literally in the body. So there's a whole new field emerging that's really helping people. That's really what's called the energy psychology movement, or what I call implicit change movement, in which we're addressing the body. We're no longer doing talk therapy because that doesn't change anything. So when you do massage or you do acupuncture or chiropractic or what's called EFT or EMDR or Psych K or body talk, this is all addressing the body as the subconscious mind. And when we begin to release that energy that's stored in the body, it's literally like taking a log out of a log jam. And the person has a lot of waste that begins to be released. The body begins to reorganize itself. The person literally views their life from a different place because they feel better. And when they feel better, they begin to make different choices. They begin to think differently. They begin to behave differently. And they literally step out of their past.
Does that help you?
Yes. Well, in fact, 25 years ago, I came up with a saying that the body is the pet of the mind.
That's a good analogy. Thanks, Michael. Next up, Joe in New York City. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, Joe.
I'd like to ask your guest, Dr. Dispenza, About OCD, you mentioned rewiring earlier in the show, and I'd like to know if that's possible to achieve permanent relief from OCD.
Yeah, you know, there's some great research being done by Schwartz, Jeffrey Schwartz, that shows that the biggest thing that seems to help people with OCD is to move into the present moment. And if they can just acknowledge the feeling that they're having and stay with the feeling without doing anything and be with it for a long enough period of time, that type of stasis literally unfires and unwires circuits in the brain that are literally working too hard with OCD. And with OCD, it's like a part of the brain that's like the gear shifter, can't shift gears. And so being present and working on noticing the feeling and seeing how long you can stay with that feeling without doing something to relieve it or make that feeling go away is the beginning stages of changing it. And Schwartz's work is pretty novel and has been very successful in it.
Okay, thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Let's go to Mike in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Listen, I just have something to add here real quick. It's small compared to the previous callers, and I'm sure you'll have a lot more following. But, you know, I'm going through a lot of stuff right now in my life. But and one thing I did that I noticed that made me feel a little better, at least, was I logged off of Facebook. It seemed to give me a false connection to people, even to people in my past, even to people around me. They'd put stuff, and I knew the stuff they posted was bogus, but and then pretty soon it was like a novelty thing, okay, you know. But now, then I was like, I check in and it's like, well, someone didn't write me, or what, isn't there more to this experience? And it was like a weight on me.
Sure.
It gave me, and when I signed off it just felt a little bit more that I could address my own issues and my own future rather than kind of wasting my time in the past or a false reality. And I'll take your comments on the air.
Wow.
That's a pretty good analogy, isn't it, Joe?
It's a great choice that you made. And let's talk about reaffirming an identity. You know, we reaffirm our identity emotionally and neurologically by the things that we repeatedly do. So if we're looking outside of ourselves constantly to try to make some feeling go away inside of us, and we're distracting ourselves from those feelings, as we said earlier, we literally get lost in the confusion of who we think we are. The moment we begin to make other choices, look, when you play a computer game or you interact on Facebook, what most people don't know is that every time something that you do during the computer game or during the Facebook makes you feel good, it begins to turn on the pleasure centers in your brain, and your brain begins to squirt out a certain amount of dopamine, which makes you feel good. Now, if you keep doing that repeatedly, the pleasure centers begin to recalibrate at a higher level, and you become dependent on something outside of you to make you feel good. And then if something doesn't, you expect something to happen on Facebook and it doesn't happen, then you don't get the high that you're looking for. So then you try to create it by staying on it longer, and that sounds like an addiction to me. So as we begin to remove ourselves from the things that hijack our pleasure centers, we begin to find more balance in our brain and body. And the bottom line is that if you keep doing that extensively, and the pleasure centers get hijacked to such a high level, then we can't find pleasure in anything. We can't go watch a sunset. We can't, you know, go visit an elder. We can't take the dog for a walk because we're overstimulated to such a degree. And that's what technology is really doing for a lot of people. And so that's a great choice because it's really changing your brain chemistry back to normal, and you'll begin to feel more like yourself than you have in a long time.
Joe, is an addiction mental or physical?
Oh, it's both. An addiction is something you can't stop. It feels really good while you're doing it, and it feels really bad when you stop it. And so if you think about any addiction, if you're angry, right, and I said to you, hey, why are you so angry? Why don't you just stop? Well, if you can't stop the anger, then there's an addiction to anger. if you're playing a video game and I say, hey, it's time for dinner, you know, break it down, and you can't stop the video game, then that's an addiction. If you're, you know, interacting on Facebook, and you have to check your Facebook page every 15 minutes or so, and you can't stop that, that sounds like an addiction to me. So there's neurological, biological, and physiological components that ultimately lead to physical changes.
Are we creating addicts by doing that?
I think so, because if you think about it, what happens, you know, let's talk about video gaming. You know, a child playing a video game and they're blowing somebody up or shooting somebody or breaking through.
And they don't leave. They're there all the time.
They're there all the time. And every time they break through a level or kill somebody or beat somebody up or strike somebody, they're producing dopamine in their brain, and the brain wakes up momentarily. Now, if you take that child and they spend an hour playing video games, and now they go to school, and learning should be a reward in and of itself. But now they can't get their brain to turn on because they just overstimulated it and they can't learn. And what do you think they do to turn their brain on? They act out. They get in trouble to release adrenaline and epinephrine to get their brain woken up for a period of time, and that begins to create attention problems. Now, fast forward 20 years down the line when this child is now an adult and they have to address some really uncomfortable situations emotionally in their life. Instead of facing those conditions and actually moving through them, they'll try to escape by trying to make that uncomfortable feeling go away. And that's when we start to create a culture of addiction.
That's interesting. It's pretty fascinating work that you do. How about colleagues? People agree with you?
Well, I think it's becoming pretty well known now that that pleasure centers are being altered by technology. I think it's becoming the standard, and the physiology is in place, and I think it's just the level, creating the exposure for people to really wake up to it and then to begin to make different choices.
Do you think when people, like, hit their heads, it could change their personality, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. Brain injuries and brain trauma, you know, are just one of the major things that begin to not only change a person's personality, but ultimately lead to neurodegenerative diseases later on in their life. And, you know, if you have children and they're playing sports and from skiing to whatever, bicycles, and they're not wearing a helmet, you're taking a huge risk, because it's those type of, you know, deceleration injuries where the brain is the consistency of a soft-boiled egg, and it's in this bony structure. And when you have an impact, that brain slushes around in there, it begins to create areas that begin to no longer function properly. And now we're in trouble.
All right, we're going to come back with you, Joe. We're going to take final phone calls in just a moment. Plus, I'll tell you what's in store for our next Coast to Coast show. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back. On our next Coast to Coast program, Lori Toy joins us back after a while. She has created a map of what she thinks the future will look like. It's an amazing story. And when we come back in just a moment, we'll take final phone calls here with Dr. Joe Dispenza on Coast to Coast AM. Joe, how much of this is admitting, of course, that you have a problem or a situation that you need to fix?
Well, recognizing and admitting is always the first two steps to change. You have to recognize that there's something that you want to change, and then you have to admit there's something that you want to change about yourself, and then declare it so that you can begin the process of working inside of you. So, and outside of you, as a matter of fact. So whether you say to yourself, gosh, I want to lose 10 pounds, I have to recognize that I'm overweight, and I have to admit that I'm eating too much, and I have to begin to declare that I'm going to make these changes. It just seems to be the formula that people tend to follow when they're interested in making permanent changes. And so admission, or beginning to admit, is really beginning to tell the truth about who you are, instead of hiding it, getting it out there and saying, okay, I admit that I have this problem and I want to change. And it could be losing weight. It could be any type of thing that we want to change, it's a good place to start.
Okay, let's go to final calls now, if we can. St. Cloud, Minnesota. John's a first-time caller. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Good morning.
George, love your show. You do such a great job of opening up people's minds, which is definitely needed now.
It sure is. Thank you, John.
I was actually calling because you were talking about extraordinary events earlier. Joe was meeting people that had extraordinary events in their life. And last February, I went through 3 days of, I guess you'd call it sleep paralysis or whatnot. After the 3 days, for about the next 3 months, I had vibrations. And I have degenerative disc disease and spina bifida, live in chronic pain, whatnot, always have. But I went to the doctors, did the tests and things, and to find out exactly what it was. And everything came back negative. So I started looking a little bit further, but I started going more into the metaphysical. And I found out more about the conscious mind and astral travel and things like that. And that led to learning things about stuff like the biotuner that's made by Bob Beck, or the lucid light stimulators, different things like that. Have you heard of those devices?
Absolutely. Let's talk about a few things here that's happening to you, first of all. When you move into that state of sleep paralysis, this is what I call the theta state of the brain, because this is the state where your body is asleep, but your mind is awake. And this is what I call magic land, because this is the place where the paranormal happens to people. When people start to have these vibratory sensations, I've certainly had them myself, the first thing is that it's so unknown that we tend to think that there's something wrong instead of something right. And that vibration is information that's coming into your nervous system and coming into your body. Your body moves in and out of the quantum field very, very frequently. And when it leaves, it gains information. And when it comes back, it brings that information with it. So when you begin to move into this altered state, that's information coming into your body. And the idea when that happens is to surrender into it, because if you surrender into it and you relax into it and you let it consume you, more than likely an uncommon or an unusual event will happen, whether it's a remission from your pain, whether it's an out-of-body experience, whether it's an interdimensional experience. But that is the signature of what typically happens when people begin to open up to other levels of consciousness. Now, all of those different devices that you've talked about is literally, those devices are designed to create an opening or some type of coherence or some type of order in a body that has been in some way disorganized because of stress or disease or whatever. So I always think that, you know, if you look at it, they're adjuncts to getting your mind and body aligned. But the more important thing is that the fact that it's happening to you is an important time in your life. And my recommendation is to relax, to surrender into it, and let the unknown take you for a ride.
In the same way you say changing your mind can make you healthy, can it also make you sick?
Well, we know without a doubt that the chemicals of stress, the adrenaline and the cortisol, those are the chemicals that pull the genetic buttons or pull the trigger that create disease. It's an absolute fact. We talked about earlier that we can turn on the stress response just by thought alone. We can think of a past memory, or we can forecast some worst-case scenario, and we can turn on the stress response just by thinking about those conditions, because the body begins to physiologically change by the instruction of the mind. So if we know then that the chemicals of stress create disease, and we know that that our thoughts are related to turning on the stress response, then it begs the question, can our thoughts make us sick? Well, the answer is absolutely yes, because if we can turn on a stress response just by thought alone, and stress makes us sick, then absolutely, that is the mind-body connection. Now, the real question is, if our thoughts can make us sick, is it possible that our thoughts make us well? And that is an important question to begin to ask, because we know from a scientific fact that the elevated emotions of gratitude,
of thankfulness, of love, of joy, these elevated states that exist outside of those survival emotions, above those survival emotions, begin to signal new genes in new ways. Well, think about it. If you're giving thanks ahead of an actual experience, the emotional signature of gratitude means the event has already happened. So when we couple a clear intention, a very clear intention in our mind, and an intention is getting clear on what we want, with an elevated emotion of how we would feel if the event already happened, independent of waiting for the environmental signal to happen, but we create the emotion by thought alone, we begin to signal new genes in new ways. And if you're able to do that every single day, there's a good chance your body will begin to change to reflect a new mind.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line, Michael in Stanford, Indiana. Michael, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you.
Sure.
First off, I'd like to say, Joe, I'm a first-time caller, and I have just agreed with everything that you've had to say tonight, and especially whenever you touched on if something was to happen to someone whenever they were younger, because I feel like with what you're speaking about, at a younger age, that's going to be a whole lot longer time of things building up and toxins being in your body, you know, and things weighing on a person's mind. And I just wonder if that plays a part with the anxiety role.
Absolutely. Let's talk about anxiety, and I'll make it brief. But what is anxiety? Anxiety is trying to forecast, or you begin to obsess about some really terrible scenario, condition that may happen in your life. And as you continuously review it and prepare yourself for that to happen, and you get ready for it, your body begins to physiologically change, and it begins to live in the future. And that state is called anxiety. Now, if you keep obsessing about something that happened to you in the past, and you do it over and over again, some terrible scenario, you begin to condition your body into a state of depression or hopelessness or powerlessness. And so one of the problems that we have as human beings is that we're always trying to predict and get ready for something bad to happen so that we're ready for it. Now, that's kind of a funny thing, because when we get it right and we're prepared and we actually, you know, do it properly, and we say, hey, you should hang out with me. Look how smart I am. I've actually done this. But what happens when it doesn't happen? When it doesn't happen, that's called anxiety. That's called neurosis, that's called obsessive compulsive disorder, because you're trying to forecast some scenario and it never happens, and that's what begins to knock the brain and body out of balance. And so when we have childhood traumas or we have incidents that happen early on in our life, for the most part, we don't understand even how they happened or why they happened. And so my model is very simple. Forget about the experience, because by thinking about the experience or talking about the experience, you're beginning to fire and wire those circuits in your brain to reaffirm that identity. And if you work yourself up into an emotional state, you begin to recondition your body into the past. I say, forget about the event. Just work on the emotion and begin to unmemorize those emotions. And as you begin to overcome an emotion, a memory without the emotional charge is called wisdom, and that's the name of the game. That's why we're here.
Some people do have, compulsive natures about them. Is that necessarily bad, Joe?
When it interferes with your normal life, then it is. But, you know, there are plenty of people in history that were geniuses, that were very over-focused on concepts, or very over-focused on their inventions, or single-minded in the way that they pursued their passions, musicians and artists. So as long as it doesn't interfere with your normal life, and as long as you can stop it so that you can function, then it's a healthy thing. It's passion. It's a single-minded focus. But when it begins to interfere in our sleep, or interfere with our eating patterns, or interfere with our family life, or interfere with some things that we do, and it begins to become a predictable and patterned, then we got to start looking at how we can change it.
Okay, let's go next to Paramus, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. William, good morning.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay.
I've been a long-time listener, actually, since I was 11.
Thank you.
So you're like...
We've grown up together, huh?
But no, I actually wanted to share an experience, and then I had a question. I just wanted to get both of your takes on this. Growing up, I was severely in school throughout my whole life, high school, middle school, bullied by my peers. And then when I graduated high school, even though I had exceptional grades and an exceptional GPA, my parents stopped me from going away to college. So, but I feel as though I was able to use all that to my benefit and turn it around, because I felt like I played the victim role forever inside, because I just listened to everyone. And within the past couple of years, I'm 22 now, I was able to write for a couple of magazines, local magazines, freelance, and get a large following for myself. And I actually work at a local radio station. And this is all without having completed a college degree. And I also have extremely notable references. I actually organized a benefit in Manhattan last year that featured a lot of notable DJs, musicians, and reality personalities. So I was able to do all this on my own. But right now I'm almost at a crossroads in my life where I'm actually trying to get a job at in a bigger market at a radio station. But I'm wondering if I should go back to and try to complete a degree, or if it's really necessary, because I've been able to accomplish so much on my own so far. And I've been sort of having a little bit, not anxiety, but sort of been contemplating it constantly. And I'm just wondering what your take is on it, and if you think the reason that I'm kind of at a crossroads right now is just because I've been thinking about my past a lot.
Well, this is a really great question. Number one, first of all, just want to acknowledge you for overcoming your past, because the choices that you made in pursuing your passion and pursuing a future at 22 years old, you literally changed your biology by doing that. The fact that you said, I'm not going to be defined by the things that happened to me in my past, and I'm going to get beyond these emotions, and I'm going to create the life that I want, is a testament for you that you can do just about anything in your life. Now, my answer is both. Never stop learning. Every time you learn, you make a new connection in your brain, and that becomes the raw materials, the forerunner for new experiences. So whether you get a degree or you take online classes or you go to evening classes, if you're that skilled and that talented in terms of what you've just described to me, then do both. Continue your passion, continue to pursue it, continue to step outside the box, continue to lay yourself out there, but never stop learning. Always continue to learn, because as you continue to learn, you will continue to evolve and grow. So do both of those things at the same time, and keep going, and let the universe take you to where you need to be.
All right, good advice, by the way. Sacramento, California. Harry, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Harry.
Hi, George. You know, I've been listening to this program for 20-some years, and I say this is probably in the top 2 or 3% of my favorite shows.
Oh, good.
This is something I'm going to look more into. A few years ago, I went through a divorce, probably 15 years ago, and I really went through a bad time after that. I was addicted to drugs heavily, lost my home, and then I didn't want my son to see me this way. He was with my wife, but it came to the point where I knew I was going to not be in his life at all if I didn't do something about it. So I went to a recovery house for 90 days, and I was able to kick the drug, and I've been clean ever since. It's been I'm in my sixth year, and haven't touched it. So, but when I was doing that, I used to go out at night and just kind of, I guess you would call it meditate, just by myself out and look at the stars. And sometimes I could swear I could hear my brain tear. You know, I was going through such a heavy a change, and actually I think it was, things started to make sense to me that I seriously feel that I changed as a person, and I went back kind of to my childhood, to where I understood that it was so much easier to do, it was a lot easier to do the right things than I had learned older. You know, I mean, if the right things came to me more naturally, the right way to think, the right way to talk to, you know, to treat people.
Mm-hmm.
And I changed just such, I mean, so many people told me that I was just a different person. But so I understand a little bit of what you're talking about. But what I would like to ask you about is guilt. How do you look at guilt? And I'll get off the phone and listen to your answer.
We've got about a minute to go here, Joe.
Okay, really simple. Well, guilt is when you feel bad about something. And I always tell my children that the chemicals that run in your body after an experience last for 90 seconds to 2 minutes. Anything past then, you're either faking it or you're becoming addicted to it.
Huh.
So guilt means that you feel bad about something, but that's not who you really are. The best thing you can do for the people in your life, for yourself, for your body, is to let go of that guilt and step out as a worthy man, ready to engage in a new life and leave that in your past.
Joe, would you give out your website, if you would, please?
Sure. Our website is just drjoedispenza.com, drjoedispenza.com.
Name of the book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. Joe, thanks so much, and good luck. What's your next evolution here?
Well, we're teaching advanced courses now, and it seems to be changing people's lives, and people are having amazing mystical experiences. So that's my interest now.
Good for you, Joe. Hey, thanks for being on the program, Joe.
Thank you so much, George.
Appreciate it. Dr. Joe Dispenza, fascinating book, but it's a fascinating discussion as well. Well, he's also a best-selling author. His first book was called Evolve Your Brain. And you know what? Everybody needs to change a little bit. It's a great way to do it. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Shadlon DeSoor, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.